Now I'd like to introduce a speaker who is Erik Drass, also known as Shardcore. And the talk will be about truth and post-truth. Before the talk, actually, I have to give a disclaimer. Me introducing this talk doesn't mean endorsing it, because I work for a fact-checking, impartial organization. So I don't know anything about the contents of this talk. I never met the speaker. Please enjoy.
The internet is full of lies. Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming. I'm Erik Drass. When I am instantiated physically, I am called Shardcore on the internet for long and tedious reasons. I'm going to talk to you tonight about truth and what's happening to truth in 2018. A lot of my work involves what I call algo culture, which is the intersection between human culture and machines. Culture here is defined by E.B. Tyler, a bearded Victorian man, as that complex whole which includes knowledge, belief, art, morals, law, custom, and any other capabilities and habits acquired by man as a member of society. Key word here being man. It's not like that anymore. Culture doesn't only exist in humans. I tend to think of culture itself as the organism. We are all instantiating some culture, and we share it between us, and we keep culture alive. We talk to each other, we share ideas, we communicate. If there was a magic ray from the satellite that passes over tomorrow morning that wiped our brains, we'd wake up and be banging rocks together. Culture is a thing that makes us clever. We're fundamentally just hairless apes. So where does culture live now? Culture lives not only in humans, but it lives in machines. Culture lives here. This is a data center in the middle of a desert. This is where Facebook lives. Unfortunately or fortunately, that's now part of culture. One of the things I do as an artist is introduce algorithmic entities into this blended culture, often in the form of Twitter bots. Easiest way of describing it is the nature of the internet. If we look at internet traffic, 61.5% of traffic going over the internet is not human. So this is what you would call bot traffic. Obviously, a lot of it is, you know, banks talking to each other, but it's fundamentally machines talking to other machines rather than humans talking to each other. If we look at Twitter in particular, Twitter, by its own admission, has 8.5% non-human interactions. It's about 23 million bots living on Twitter. 23 million of the people that you interact with online are not, they're machines. These days, we tend to think of it in terms of these kind of machines, the kind of Russian troll farm, where a message is sent out expressing a particular political view, and then it's replicated thousands and thousands of times by accounts that may or may not seem plausible, but they amplify the signal. They make more noise about the thing that you want to say. But we're going to go back to 2010, when this guy was still part of our government. And he turned up to the Houses of Parliament off his face, as you can see. I actually started building bots before that. These are two bots from 2006. This is The Truth, first bot I built, which mashed up celebrity gossip from the 3AM girls, Perez Hilton, and a couple other places, and would generate new celebrity facts. I also built another one in a similar form, which is The Word of God, which took the Quran, the King James Bible, and the complete works of L. Ron Hubbard and mashed them together to generate the Word of God. Interestingly, back in the day, this is 2006, if you use the hashtag God, your bot gets followed by lots of fundamentalist preachers in America. So I kind of like to think that there was some crazy foaming at the mouth evangelical Christians who were avidly following my bot, which contained lots of Scientology. Twitter changed. Twitter became less about having fun and making in-jokes with fellow nerds and became more about selfies or people with really obnoxious opinions who feel they have to get in your face and say, we don't want to know about anything you might know. I have my own opinion. Fuck off. And it was about 2010 when I realized that the internet was full of lies. It was actually prompted by this image of Barack Obama, purportedly showing that he was a foreign student. And what happens is people see this stuff And if you want to believe that Barack Obama wasn't born in the States, you retweet this stuff straight away. You don't check its veracity. It's very easy in a network culture to pass things on, and particularly if they agree with your own worldview. It was about this time that I invented probably one of my most famous bots, which is FactBot, which is a Twitter bot that makes up lies to introduce obvious falsehoods into the internet. I took a particular meme form here with your picture and your text. So caterpillars are attracted to the color blue more than any other color. That may or might not be true. I don't know. A coat molecule is made of 185,000 individual hamsters. Less likely, but I don't know. You put a picture of a hamster on it and maybe it's true. I noticed early on that the celebrity facts are very popular. Drew Barrymore is capable of surviving on average for 6 weeks without eating. Again, maybe it's true, I don't know. The most interesting ones were the ones that are on the edge of believability. So this crows emit ultrasonic sounds to communicate with each other. Apparently that's true. Someone came up to me after a talk and said, actually they do squeak at each other. So even a machine designed to lie, like a stopped clock, occasionally tells the truth. Obviously this stuff is drawing from the internet, and the internet is not yet fully sentient. We don't really have a good semantic web. So it will produce these kind of things. It takes a cricket up to 49 days to digest the donate. That's the number one hit for the word cricket. My bot doesn't know that that's not a cricket. You may be familiar with this. Nietzsche said it well, 1886, there are no facts, there are only interpretations. 2017, there's this guy saying the same thing. It's exactly the same lines, that there's no truth, there's no underlying truth that you guys can get at. All you have to do is believe me, believe the words that I say, because I am your orator of truth. Now, lying obviously has been around for a while. I particularly love the Weekly World News, which is an American publication. Atlanta woman has world's smallest face. Saddam and Osama adopt shaved baby ape. Seems implausible until you see that it's 1 month after their gay wedding shocked the world. And obviously there are other forms of lies that are peddled out as truth. I'm unsure of your political leanings, but I would suspect that you're not Daily Express readers, so I can show this slide. These lies are told to us, not to us directly, but to lots of other people who buy this and believe it. It's all about migrants and statins, as far as I can tell. Interestingly, politicians are well aware of this. I'm going to show you a brief clip here of Newt Gingrich, which gets to the nub of it. Oh, can we have some sound?
The average American, I will bet you this morning, does not think crime is down, does not think they are safer.
But it is, we are safer, and it is down.
No, that's your view. People feel it. More threatened.
Yes, they feel it, but the facts don't support it.
As a political candidate, I'll go with how people feel, and I'll let you go with the theoreticians.
So that's an amazing confession. And interestingly, been deleted. It was a good job I ripped that off YouTube. He doesn't want to be known for confessing the truth, which is the feelings of our fellow humans are what sell proper political stories and move hearts and minds. You don't move brains. You don't rationalize. You don't weigh up the truth. You don't give people all the options and let them make a decision. You say, how do you feel? I feel scared. Great. Vote for me. I'll make you less scared. That's all they need to do as a politician. Truth is a little sprinkling of dust on the top. Which brings us to where we are. 2018, what the fuck is going on? Donald Trump said on the campaign trail that online popularity is more powerful than wealth, and he is allegedly a very wealthy man. And it's true. He got where he is by the fact that he was on television and people like to talk about him, not through any political skill, as is becoming evident. Now, the underlying problem is that social media is like crack. We are highly addictive humans, and we're highly addicted to this mechanism. We're evolved to recognize novelty and danger. You know, if we're out on the African savanna with our fellow nomads and a lion appears, that's an important piece of information. We should pay attention to that. We should remember that the lion lives behind that rock. So we're evolved to remember that very quickly. We get a good hit of important information. Now we have social media feeds, which can give us a hit every split second. But we're still evolved exactly the same way. We're really excited. Oh, I've learned something new. I've learned something new. I've learned something new. And it keeps us addicted to it. It means it's a useful place to mess with the truth and mess with propaganda. Let's have a look at our relationship with reality. We have reality, a fundamental reality that exists outside of ourselves. That may or may not be true. That's another talk. But let's go along with it for now. There is an external reality. On top of that, we have direct perception. So you guys are directly perceiving me give this talk. You guys have a pretty good relationship with what's going on in terms of truth right now. But rarely do we get that close. We tend to get reportage. Someone will come out of here and say, oh, I saw this absolutely fucking brilliant guy, EMF camp. You should check him out. That's obviously going to happen after this talk. On top of that, we have opinion, which is, oh, well, I spoke to this guy who saw that thing, and he said he was a wanker. Oh, that's kind of important. And we're already, you know, further and further away from reality. The problem being that now we exist at this layer of delicious, crispy bullshit. That's a much happier place to live in. All the fun stuff is happening up there. It's a long way from reality. Following on from the previous speaker, from the Evil Empire, Eric Schmidt from the Evil Empire himself said that it's going to be very hard for people to watch or consume something that has not been in some sense tailored for them. He said this a couple of years ago, but think about what that means, is that you have no direct access to reality anymore. It's mediated by a machine. It's mediated by an algorithm. An algorithm decides what you get to see or what it thinks you might like. So we're now in this situation where we've got reality and we've got a machine perception. And that's what we get to see. So we don't even get to see the world anymore. We get to see what the machines see of the world. And on top of it, another layer of fucking crispy bullshit. And that's where we live. We're not even related to the underlying truth anymore. And when we think about it, who's responsible for this? The man with the world's most punchable face. I actually don't think he's fundamentally evil himself. I think, you know, I'm sure amongst this audience, we've all met people very much like Mark Zuckerberg in our time. He's well-meaning, but around him, because of the system he's built, are some very nasty people. This is Bob Mercer, who is a data controller and data evangelist in the States. He's part of this network, along with Cambridge Analytica and Aggregate IQ, which has a whole set of political relationships to much like a pressure group in a political situation will apply money and power to persuade people's minds. You can do it at the data level now. Now, this talk, when I first gave it a few months ago, Cambridge Analytica hadn't blew up, so I'll skip this bit very quickly. Most interestingly to me is what they call themselves, Cambridge Analytica. We're a data-driven behavior change. We use data to change your behavior, which is written in black and white on their mission statement. Is that not one of the most evil things you've ever heard? If you actually stop and think about it, what does Cambridge Analytica do? They take data and they change your behavior without you necessarily being conscious of it. And to do this, they use the now famous Ocean scores, which are based on models of people who filled in online personality tests. Lots and lots of people filled in their personality tests, allowed them to take this slicing of the psychographic profile of the people. They then use these profiles and the behavior of those people to extrapolate onto the entire rest of the Facebook population. Here's a lovely diagram of them squishing together lots of data points where you come. You put it in the great magical machine, and out comes your psychographics, your demographics, everything you need to know to sell you that piece of shit that you see in the sidebar of every website you go to. Thankfully, they got caught, or at least Cambridge Analytica got caught. But the fundamental process of gathering data and analyzing it algorithmically to produce a summary, very much like the last talk, exactly what neural networks do, you gather a huge amount of data to produce a convenient summary, is fundamentally a dangerous thing. The point being, if you're not paying for it, you're not the consumer. You're the product being sold, which I'm sure you've all heard before, but it's very true, particularly in Facebook. We're in a situation of weaponized social media. Now, the problem is, we stink. Everything that we do online, everywhere we go, every interaction we make, every purchase we make is recorded somewhere by someone. And if that is part of a network that's being monitored by a large social network, for example, a Facebook tag is pretty much on every page of any major website now, they're tracking stuff way outside of what you're doing on Facebook. this seems fine and innocuous until this guy turned up and freaked a lot of people out. He revealed all sorts of things. My personal favorite is this one, which I have to look up. It's the Combined Federated Battle Laboratories Network. So this is from some of the Snowden documents. And this shows you the data sharing relationship that goes on between countries. So the important thing to remember is when your elected official says, don't worry, we're not going to look at your data, we're not going to monitor it, that's fine, we're interested in your privacy. They have a data sharing relationship with someone else on the network. So you can be recorded in England, analyzed in America, and the UK can then get the data back. Because, oh, we didn't actually do it ourselves, but we shared the results of this. And as you can see, there's lots of networks, there's a lot of countries involved. This stuff is from like 2006. This stuff's been going on for a long time. A lot of my work as an artist is being quite angry about this stuff, as you may have told. This is a bot that I built while Theresa May was Home Secretary, which is a Twitter bot that never tweets. This simply looks for people using particular hashtags about Snoopers Charter. And when it finds someone like that, it just starts putting them on Twitter lists. Aberrant voting behavior, candidate for extradition, deep search, that kind of thing. And these were timed over time, so you get a flurry of worrying lists that you were added to. And then over the next couple of weeks, you get more and more, fundamentally showing you exactly what's going on, right? GCHQ is algorithmically putting all of us on lists in some way. This was quite a fun bot. People really liked it. They're not sure if it's true or not. Some people got very pissed off. I like this one here. This is not acceptable, Twitter, to allow Theresa May bot to put people on lists. That's the fucking point. Obviously, it aroused the Anon 4chan freaks who said, block it immediately. This is a sinister bot that's out to collect information. It's not. It's 100 lines of Python. It's really nothing sinister. But if you start doing this stuff, if you start putting people on lists, they get very, very disturbed. And the point it's making is that we're all effectively being scored. This is from a Chinese railway station with face identification running. China is actually quite interesting because they can do what the fuck they want. And they're doing a lot of technically interesting and morally terrifying things. For example, this popped up a few weeks ago, the Google Glass type device that the lady cop is wearing allows real-time facial identification of people in the crowd. And within the first few days, they were tapping people at the train station saying, ah, no, you've got an arrest warrant, you're not who you say you are, right in the face of the cop. Now, as we know, China's bad, it's not happening anywhere else. But it kind of is. Several US states have admitted to keeping scores on individuals who live in their states, so that when you are stopped by law enforcement, the police officer can see your risk. You know, a mark out of 10. How likely is this guy to be a villain or not? And that's been analyzed from data behind your back, put on a database that you can't see. Now, that would be fucking great if it worked. But as we discover, these systems don't. Some of you may be familiar with this. This is a set of images that can be identified by object recognition networks as the things that they say. So these squiggly lines says King Penguin whenever you show that image. It's been trained on thousands of images of King Penguins, but because of the way it represents the world, which is not human, you can find these adversarial patterns that when put in front of a machine will produce the response. It's probably more obvious with this one here. This is a 3D printed turtle that identifies as a rifle in any orientation. So you could theoretically walk through a airport with one of these things in your hand and the automated systems would send the people to knock you down. This is the problem, right? The algorithms are not perfect. Here's another example. Google released a image recognition system on their software. Once you upload your systems, it would helpfully classify your photographs and say, oh, it's a picture of you on the beach, it's a picture of you in the bar. No, this, all black people are gorillas, is what it said. Because the data set is massively underrepresentative. The data set of Google is full of white, pasty-faced programmers like Mark Zuckerberg, they don't have a lot of data on black people. They've got a lot of people taking pictures of gorillas. They must be the same thing. Interestingly, Google's response to this was not to fix their algorithm or retrain it. It was to remove the tag gorilla from their systems. So it doesn't do that anymore, but it hasn't actually addressed the underlying system. Now, we're used to being lied to by algorithms. Obviously, the most obvious being Photoshop's usage in fashion. This is Kim Kardashian as she actually is versus how you see her in a glossy magazine. In the interest of balance, here's one of One Direction. And the representations we're receiving through the media have already been through an algorithmic process. And these things come into our phones, and Snapchat filters. Snapchat filters are accused of whitening people's skin, thinning their nose, makes them look less like their original natural ethnic state, because that's the defined algorithmic version of beauty, is to be lighter, to have a thinner nose. And here's another great example. This photo, innocuously uploaded by a guy onto Google Cloud, is actually a composite of two images. If you compare these two, it's taken these two images and produced this third one, where they're both smiling. That happened entirely automatically, without this guy's knowledge, just as a matter of function within the Google system. Because you want pictures of people smiling, but it's no longer the truth. This moment in time never happened, but it exists on your phone as something that did happen. Lies are put into content. There's a company called Myriad that will, in real time, put video ads into existing footage. So if you want to advertise in anything that's on YouTube, you can buy ad space in existing content and put your advert up on the wall. You may have heard of deepfake.
Völlig
recently.
Verlassen konnten. Die sind ein Stück vorbei. Das habe ich in den letzten Tagen erlebt.
This is true. This is Angela Merkel turning into Donald Trump.
Wir Europäer müssen unser Schicksal wirklich in unsere eigene Hand nehmen. Natürlich in Freundschaft mit den Vereinigten Staaten von Amerika, in Freundschaft mit Großbritannien.
So, it's a little shoddy. It's not perfect. But this is being knocked up by guys on their GPUs in their bedrooms. This kind of style transfer would have taken supercomputers a few years ago. And lo and behold, there's a website for it now. You can go and set up your own deepfakes, upload the stuff, taken care of. This is within 2 months of giving this talk. This one I find particularly interesting, the face-to-face neural network mapping that allows you to puppet another piece of footage. So you can see the George Bush footage at the bottom, the actor above, and then to the side, that's the face being puppeted in real time by an actor. Now, if you saw that in your social media feed, there's no reason that you wouldn't think that wasn't George Bush saying something. But this technology exists and is in the hands of, you know, any of us, basically. And the one that came out this week that I really liked is a motion retargeted video, which is able to extract the pose and movement from video and then transfer it. This is probably the best way of seeing it. So this is the original footage. These are the people who wrote the code, and here they are. So, as you can see, it's very difficult to believe what you see. This is another very recent example of video to video that allows you to semantically segment a video feed and then replace it. In the interest of time, check out the video on the bottom where they replace the trees with buildings in real time. So this entire video sequence is created from a semantically extracted piece of video, but in effectively real time, they can change the scenery behind it. So, where did this stuff start? You could blame the nerds, I blame the hippies. In 1968, Robert Anton Wilson and Kerry Thornley came up with a concept called Operation Mindfuck, which was to use the channels of communication to disseminate chaotic ideas.
Operation Mindfuck is a form of guerrilla ontology. It's a group effort involving many people, and it is an attempt to galvanize the minds of many readers and television viewers and moviegoers to suddenly see the world in a new way.
Operation Mindfuck has three rules, four, I think, actually. Be weird, it's its sole commandment. Be exceedingly weird. Be so weird you frighten your neighbors, then get weirder still. I realized that, in fact, this is unknowingly perhaps an inspiration for some of my work. this is a bot that I built called the Glitch News Network that tells the day's news in 2 seconds. So every 4 hours, you can get the news summarized for you. Interestingly, this generative artwork came into conflict with algorithms at Tumblr, who claimed it was pornography. And this happened quite a lot, actually. Almost every day, it would say, your news reports are pornographic. Someone on Twitter found this, suggesting that maybe that's the source of the pornographic image. It's Jeremy Corbyn's marrow. I'm not sure, but it's working in this way with social media networks, you're up against automated systems that are trying to prune out lies and prune out filth, because there's not enough humans to actually look at this stuff. And they can catch you out. So just to end, I'm going to talk on a new project they're working on. In fact, you're one of the first audiences to see it, so you're in for a treat. So let's talk about porn. 13% of all internet searches are for erotic content. Approximately 30% of all internet traffic is porn-related. 70% of male internet users consume porn. This is a huge area of data space. There's a lot going on in the world of porn. The algorithms aren't looking at that. They're looking at what you write on Twitter. But this is actually a true representation of human behavior. If you give a monkey a dark room and a picture of a naked monkey, they get excited. They do this stuff. So I've been looking at systems that are able to reinterpret pornography using algorithmic systems in a project I'm calling Color Anticlimax. First step was to use Google's own deep dream systems, which are trained on image classification. But you can use them in reverse and ask the neural network what it thinks it sees. Now, for me, what's interesting about this stuff is that it exists in that liminal space. Like, this is only dirty if you think it's dirty. Right? This is not in and of itself a dirty image. It's full of puppy slugs. Once again, you know, you as adults know that this is data, but it's not. And the way that the machine looks at it, the way the machine interprets these pixels, is fundamentally different from the way that us human beings with genitals do it. This is more style transfer stuff. And they tend to get quite beautiful. The kind of dispassionate eye of the machine produces kind of, you know, very kind of pleasingly abstract designs. More recently, I've been working with generative adversarial networks, which attempt to produce data that fits in within the data set you've got. I haven't got time to go into it. You may have seen the celebrity faces morphing into each other. This one is trained on a girl dancing. And it produces this kind of data space. So this is a machine watching a girl stripping, and this is what it thinks it sees. I kind of find it fascinating. It's an area of the internet that people don't talk about. It's a real elephant in the room of data. A couple more. This one I quite like, the three girls. So for me, it's about this point where we can look at it and go, oh, well, that's clearly naked ladies. That's kind of makes me feel a bit weird. But the machine doesn't care. And the machine, this is another set of data, just as your Amazon records are, or your, you know, your Google search history. It's another set of data. And it's producing some quite beautiful work, I think. Anyway, why bother? I'll let Robert Anton Wilson answer that.
There's an old Italian proverb, when four sit down to conspire, three of them are fools and the fourth is a government agent. I believe with modern surveillance techniques, that's more true than ever. And any overt action against the power structure is doomed to failure because of the techniques of control that have been developed. But the anarchistic impulses of art cannot be governed. I think more and more of the culture shapers are becoming part of Operation Mindfuck, and the whole world is having its mind fucked. And I'm very happy that I can play a humble part in this noble endeavor.
So for me, that's the gist of it. The only way to get involved in this stuff is to get involved in it. As Robert Anton Wilson says, the anarchistic impulses of art cannot be governed, which is why we do it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for thanking Eric. Unfortunately, we don't have time for questions right now, but Eric will be at the bar. She's just behind the stand. Thank you.